You can try to force it, but it's not going anywhere. So figuring out where they are, meeting them where they are with whether it's an email, whether it's a phone call. I know that sounds nutty in this day and age, but sometimes a phone call will get you everywhere.
Well, the thing is, people answer the phone these days because it's. Hi, and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday, the 6th of August, 2023. This is your host, Nigel Creaser, and this week we've got the second part of my interview with Kelly McGinley, the function and flow expert. Just a quick shout out. Another way that I found that you could support the show, and there's some info in the show notes, is that it's the British Podcast Awards this year for their voting cuts off on the 5th of September for what they call the People's Choice. I have no delusions that I will not win it, but being voted for and maybe getting one on lists, I don't know whether they have specialised lists or anything like that, means that discoverability for the podcast would be improved, which is always the battle with getting the show out to people. So if you're inclined to vote for me, and actually you probably vote for others as well, I personally voted for the Social Distance Sports Bar podcast that I really enjoy. If you go along to British Pods 2023, for on my website, so nigelcreaser.com/britishpods2023, and then that will redirect you to the right page, and you search for me, the Sunday Lunch Project Manager. It should pop up, click on that, and then cast your vote and you verify it, things like that, and then you can vote for other ones as well if you want. So if you can do that, I'd be very grateful, and tell your friends. Cheers now. So, I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Kling, and Mike runs PM online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreaser.com/online PM courses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's varying different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like. And I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well. So there's a very limited risk on that. So jump on that, and that again is nigelcreaser.com/online PM courses, and enjoy.
Small steps are just going to be easier than the giant leap. It's just fact. But also, momentum is small wins. It's very similar. Like the jolt that you get from a small win is almost identical to the one that you get from the moment when you get a big win. As far as how long they last and how much momentum you get out of that, it's roughly the same. So if you're having trouble getting to that next piece, breaking it down into however many small steps that you need in between, just to start the ship moving again, just to get the rudder going, have one small win leads to another one leads to another one. You're still going to have hiccups. It's not a panacea by any means, but it does sort of retrain your brain in the way you're looking at the problem, to just break it down and look at it a different way so that you can start solving each individual piece along the way.
Yeah, I like that. Two things there, kind of three things it's made me think of there actually. One of them was that I was listening to a podcast, the Running Commentary podcast, and it's about running, and it was it's a comedian, Rob Deering from the UK, and he was doing, I think it was Brighton Half, or it might have been Brighton Marathon, quite late on in the run, and someone handed him a piece of paper, and he's kind of, oh yeah, thank you, kind of bit dismissive, because they were handing out the little motivational things, and it, on the piece of paper, he said, it said, one more step. That's all it said on that piece of paper. And when you look at a run, any run, whether it's long, especially when you start doing marathons and things like that, it is one more step. That's all it is. There isn't, if you, especially when it's hard, it's one more step. When it's easy, yeah, you can think about another mile. When it's hard, focusing on the next step. And it's kind of the trust the process conversation that I've heard before now, of kind of, if you know what the process you're going to be doing is, you know you'll get there, just do that one more step. But it makes me
This is
think
one of
about,
my
no,
this is
go
one
on.
of my running brainstorms. You run the hill first, fresh legs, get the lay of the land, don't make changes just yet. Understand what the hill feels like to all the people who've been working on it before you got there. But then, I mean, what you're talking about, when it gets hard, my version of this, there's a part of my run where I just tend to question all of my life choices. I do the same loop almost every week. And there's just like, why am I'm just gonna stop. And instead, it's this lovely little portion of my run where there are 47 trees. Why it's not symmetrical just blows my mind. But it's 22 on the front end, and then what is it, 25 on the second half? And I just count the trees as I go. I count up to the middle and then I count down to the end. It drives me batty that it's not the same amount of trees on both sides, but I've learned to live with it. But I apply that. I actually use that same metaphor when I teach new project managers, new leader, emerging leaders, how, just the basics of this, because count the trees is essentially step by step, one more step, get to the next tree, get to the next tree. Don't look towards the end. We're not talking about another half mile at this point. We're just talking about the next tree. Just get there and then keep on going.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is you've got to trust that you've got what you've got to do next sorted. And sometimes actually the next step is work out what the next 15 steps are. That might be your next step. And that's the thing, is sometimes, well, I don't know what the next 15 steps are. It's kind of, well, no, because you haven't worked out what they are. So what do we need to do to work out what they are? And it's the whole thing of a work breakdown structure. And I get another analogy with my daughter. She's doing her exams at the moment, her GCSE, and we sat, I put a photo on LinkedIn the other day of us with a whiteboard and the weeks marked out and sticky notes on it. And we kind of put, just arbitrarily, I think it was where we were and how long it was to our first exam. And then we decided, right, so we that's the gap, and we do work back from that exam, 3 days, 2 days, or whatever, work back. And then we did that for all of the exams and moved them all back. And what we found is, because there's a big rump of exams at the end, there was lots and lots of stickies all together at the same time. And I kind of sat there and went, we've got a work breakdown structure there. Now that's what we've done. We broke it down into, right, okay, so you've got the chemistry exam, you've got five bits, you're going to do one, two, three, there's five of them. Somebody estimated, and the whole thing was just a project scope sizing and planning meeting that I realized that we do exactly the same sort of thing. And it's just, what's the next step? Well, you don't have to think about the exam in 2 weeks. You've got that part of the revision to do. And so you don't have, because that's the whole point of it. It looked like a lot of stuff on there, but it was a case of, well, don't worry about that. What are you doing tomorrow? What are you doing the day after? And you had that there. And it makes me think about the, and I will talk about this, about how your experience of using Agile and things like that, maybe whether you've got using any of the Agile techniques within some of your deliveries, that again, that getting it down to the smallest portion, where you are elaborating, you have a piece of work and it says, right, okay, we're going to do that piece of work. Okay, so if someone can't do it in a day, it's not detailed enough for us to understand what it is. So the first thing we've got to do is break that down into something that we can understand and we can estimate and we can get a feeling for the scale and size of it. Maybe it's not the day, I'll probably get shot by the agilists on the way that I interpret it. But my view of it is kind of, you kind of just break it down into whatever, what is manageable by the team so that someone can pick that piece of work up, be allocated to that piece of work and do that piece of work. Again, it's in a smaller microcosm. You're doing the same as you would do if you're doing a massive work breakdown structure in a project plan for a whole waterfall project. Agile you use with inside of it. From your point of view, how have you found use of agile type of techniques? Or that break, or whether you tend to be in these organizations, they tend to be the more traditional sort of deliveries.
I think if I said agile in most of the rooms that I'm in, I would have a lot of deer in the headlights.
Okay.
So we do a lot of, I do a lot of visual collaboration when it comes to project management, getting everyone in the room who's often from, the most recent one I did was a group. There are four large organizations that work together to steer the entire project. But then there's close to over two dozen smaller partners that all participate in it.
That's a big group.
It is a big group, and they all have different interests. They're spread across a 185-mile stretch of a conservation landscape. So their interests are different. Their sectors of the economy are different. Some are tourism, some are education, some are land protection. But putting it in, visualizing the thoughts is just, it's so important for getting things out. And then for me, I think the piece that I take from Agile is the retrospective. I don't think you can live without it. I don't know how it's not just commonplace to look at what you've done, go back and take a genuine and objective look at what happened here, and so that you can both improve on it if you're still working on the same thing, but also use that knowledge going forward, whether it's with your work, whether it's in another project that you're sent to work on with another team or another department. I think the reflection period, the retrospective, is invaluable in moving forward. And it makes such a better use of the time you've spent working on this project. Take all of that and take it out into the world, use it on the next thing.
Yeah, it's that lessons learned thing that, again, put my cynical hat on. So we have, you sit there and you'll go, right, you'll deliver a project, it might be 6 months, it might be 9 months. You do a lessons learned meeting where the people who were at the beginning of the project aren't there anymore because you've done all your analysis. The people who are there at the end are the ones that had to get it over the line and were annoyed with you. You know what I mean? You've got such different views of different people in there. The only constant is potentially the project manager if they hadn't got kicked off because they were doing so. You might be a new project manager in there. You don't know what happened for the first 3 months, and the customers might have changed, or all these different things that happen. And that lessons learned document actually is then written. It's a Word document. It's thrown in the drawer. It never gets picked up and used again, except for the person who vaguely remembers writing it and trying to pull the knowledge out of people in a workshop where they're just glad they're at this bleeding project's over and they've moved on to the next one. It's just, it doesn't work. The frequency and the speed of the retrospectives in the Agile, I think, is fantastic to be able to sit there. And I've had some improvement projects. I tried to use kind of Agile techniques from a point of view of that, but not running it Agile. So again, I kind of said, right, we'll have a in quotes sprint, but we'll have a time box, really, is what we did. And at the end of the time box, we'd have a retrospective and we'd have a planning session for the next time box. And it's the iterative thing and the badged it with all the stuff. But I found those retrospectives really useful because that 2 weeks in, you find out why, like I said, my colleague that we were trying to get that stuff, 2 weeks in, if you have that in there, you go, why haven't we moved any further forward? Oh, well, it's because this isn't going very well. Well, and they'll keep doing, stop doing, do differently kind of conversation. Those three questions And when you think about that, it's kind of, why didn't that happen? Oh, because of X. Okay, so how can we change that? And you're doing it there. You're steering the ship early rather than trying to handbrake turn it at the end. And it's kind of that flow through there makes life easier, I think, then. Because you are tweaking and adjusting at the same time. And I suppose that conversation, it's funny because a lot of this stuff is common sense. And it is stuff you would do if you thought about it. And it makes absolute sense. It's not no rocket science most of the time. It's just a case of, right, we're doing stuff. Let's work out what the details of the stuff we've got to do are. It's like cooking.
Yeah.
We do it in a recipe. We do cooking from a recipe is managing a project. you've got a set of instructions, you've got a set of materials, you follow the instructions in order. Some things you run in parallel because you're cooking Sunday lunch, my podcast title. You're doing a lot of things all together at the same time. You've got to bring them together, all are the same thing. And it is, and as you're going through, you're kind of going, as a chef, people who are out there who are chefs, they'll be tasting. That's your retrospective, isn't it? Hang on a minute. There's something wrong with what I've done there. I didn't put enough salt in. Right. Adjust and change. So again, that kind of analogy, I only just thought about it really properly. it kind of draws the line.
Yeah, but you've also just described with that metaphor the dependency, the complexities of dependencies, and figuring out, because sometimes where things are going off the rails, and you talk about the flow, I actually, when I teach this, I call it the bottleneck meeting. There's three meetings that I teach to try to avoid, or if you're having them, here's how to fix them. And the one is called the bottleneck meeting, and that's the one where the dependencies are just unclear, and you don't bring enough people into the conversation either early enough or frequently enough, or you've brought them in with the wrong set of expectations. But if you're tracking that as you go, you can solve some of the dependency issues in the first or second stage of the project when you realize that there is a delay specifically because this person was not brought in to begin with. And so your design had an issue that had to be redone, which caused a delay, which, you know, there's all sorts of problems that you can solve if you keep assessing as you go. But there, that comes back to that issue of accountability and not having any middle ground between the trophy and the principal's office. There's plenty of middle ground there, and it actually helps projects run more smoothly and pull people in so that they're in the room at the right people in the right room at the right time. You can do so many things. I mean, if you don't have everything on the grocery list for Sunday lunch, you're stuck at the gate. Yeah. Or you have to really go rogue with some seasonings.
yeah, absolutely. I've done that before when I was a student. Well, I always had garlic, and garlic was my friend. you can hide a lot of sins with garlic, I find, and spice up some very cheap beans that I used to buy. It's interesting with that that sort of approach of, as you say, the difference between the principal office and the gold star and all that sort of, and the ribbon, etc. It makes me think about the fact of that. It kind of talks about that bit in the middle is the we feeling, isn't it? It's where that, and you talk about mission, and it's probably in some ways you'll get more people invested in the mission of what you're trying to do, and I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, than maybe in some corporate situations. And therefore that blame game doesn't come in. If that blame game doesn't come in, you haven't got those two extremes. And what you get is, we're having our meeting, we're having a conversation. Something's not right. What have we got to do? What have we got to do? Not what have you got to do? What haven't we done rather than what haven't you done or what haven't they done? And that's where I think that, for me, that's where you start getting, right, okay, how do we solve this as a team? It doesn't matter that it was, let's say it was me who made the error, very likely. It doesn't matter to the team that an error is made or something didn't finish on time or something, we missed something. It's an owned, that accountability where we all feel ownership of it and we all think, right, okay, we're all going to miss stuff. there is going to be things we don't know, and we're all going to get it wrong. Let's, right, okay, so that's change, right? How do we, as a group, solve the problem? It's that, I know it's kind of a bit of a cliche thing. It's the Apollo 13 scenario, when that group of genius engineers are in that room going, we're going to make that fit into there. How do we do it? It's not because you didn't, they had the designers who built it, the people who did it. It's kind of like they've got all the experts who built those machines, that craft, and understood all the bits that they had. And there wasn't ramifications of whose fault it was. It was a case of, what do we do as a team to solve this problem? And I think that's the difference, isn't it? That's where you get that brilliant, powerful teams who can really energize. And when you've got that culture and that shared mission, it makes it so different.
I think too, when it starts with whoever the leader is for that team, and I know in some teams it's very flat hierarchy, but there's always somebody in the room who's calling the meeting. When that person can acknowledge a shortcoming or a missed skill on their part. I was just reading an article about GitLab the other day, and their manual has bios for senior staff that include all of their personality flaws, how to best overcome those, and their notes that were written about people who worked for them, just to make it easier on everyone. So when you can sort of weave in that personal fallibility, it just takes some of the scariness out of the accountability piece. And when you can start having those conversations and normalize them, you start building in trust and empathy over time, instead of just expecting it to appear when there's a huge problem and you haven't done anything to cultivate that over time. It's like how I deal with my garden. I don't pay any attention to it. And then I'm like, why didn't it grow? I'm not very good at it. But with people, you know, if you can tend the team just constantly in small, tiny ways, those things build on each other. And all of a sudden you have, without noticing the small incremental growth over time, this culture of trust and empathy for each other, which, just like you said, results in solution finding instead of blaming, which is really just a waste of time and energy and precious resources.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It can. And I've seen it in situations where those blame and escalations, and then both sides become defensive, and it's a he said, she said scenarios between, whether it's between departments, whether it's between the organizations I've worked with and the customer. It just ends up going, you just kind of got to get to that point where someone's got to go, right, okay, let's solve it then. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'll take the blame. Let's solve it now. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes people, I kind of want to do that before now. I've gone, my fault, my organization's fault. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we need to solve it. It doesn't change some of the commercial situations, and that's when it starts getting gnarly, but it's kind of our fault from a point of view of, yes, we've made a mistake, or maybe we've had an error, and then how do you fix that and try and move past it? And sometimes people just want to go, yeah, we could have done better. Someone to say, we could have done better. And then they go, right, okay, you've acknowledged it, let's get on. And there's no, that's it. That's all they want. Sometimes all people want is an acknowledgement that, my bad. Yes. And that's it.
Yeah. And the longer you withhold that, the more it escalates.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you get it with relationship issues where you have a misunderstanding with a partner, and you'll have one of you or both of you kind of stubbornly not acknowledging the fact that, yeah, you could have been partly to blame for it. And then you kind of go, right, yeah, okay, my fault. And then you can go past it then, can't you? And it's life so much nicer after that, isn't it?
It really is.
So I'm just looking at the time. We've been chatting away now for a good 50 minutes or so. And we haven't even dug into productivity in my head yet. Just going to ask you a really quick question on productivity. If you, with the teams and organizations that you're looking at, if there's one thing, I know you mentioned before the, from the dependencies point of view, that bottleneck meeting, but if it's, say, for individuals or for, or actually organizations, whichever way you want to play, if you were going to give an organization one thing to do, or an individual one thing to do differently than they might be doing now, to improve their productivity, what would it be? You're only allowed one.
I got this. I feel like I'm on a game show where I got the one question I know how to answer. It's next steps. It's the last thing you do in a meeting, and it's the thing that gets bulldozed over, I'll go with 99% of the time. Next steps. So what I start every meeting with, and what I teach people to start meetings with, is what's going to be different as a result of us coming together? What's the purpose of this meeting? Just so it's clear, it helps you keep things on track much better. But then there's the other half of the bookends that hold it all together. The other half of the bookends, which is this promise of progress. I gave you my time. I gave you my talent. I gave you these resources. What's going to happen as a result? What's going to be different by the next time we meet? And setting aside, my benchmark is usually 15% of your meeting needs to be the next steps. What have we decided on? Who is responsible for what and by when? And then we're all in agreement on that. It's usually in a shared space, so it's easy to get to. Ideally, I love the little interactive workspaces where you can move things around and mark them at different statuses. It just makes it's the physical joy of checking something off of a list.
Yeah, it's like the Kanban boards are moving things across, yes, isn't it? Yeah.
Sometimes you put things on a to-do list just so you can check it off. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's next steps. I think there's so many meetings that you walk out of having had a good discussion, even some that are unproductive from the jump, but some that are really useful and really good conversations and discussions, and you're headed in a great direction. But then everybody walks out the door, or the virtual door, and nobody actually knows what was supposed to happen. So the next meeting, you start in the exact same spot because there's just no clarity around what was supposed to happen next and who was going to do it. And that's where that accountability piece comes into play again. When that's clear and transparent, that we know exactly what's on deck for next time, when it's going to happen, and by who, you can keep track of that. And that, again, solves some of that dependency issue where things tend to go off the rails a little bit. Because everybody knows what's expected. I can't do this until this is done, so I've got other work I can do. I can focus on that. And people feel a lot less like their time is disrespected or not valued or, at worst, wasted, either waiting for things or doing work that is, God forbid, the thing that wasn't actually asked for or you spent tons of time on it and you hand it off and they're like, what is this? We decided not to do this, but it was unclear. So now you've got a whole new set of problems. 15% of every meeting, next steps.
You made my skin crawl then with those last two comments before that. The thing of doing things of that are unnecessary and just drives me batty. I sit there going, I don't think there's any value doing that. And it's just sometimes it's and then when you've done something and you've invested a lot of time and again, when you start talking in your sort of world with the volunteers where you've asked someone to do something and they've gone off to do something that they're doing in their own time and then come back going, oh, nice, but we didn't want that. I can imagine how people feel in those scenarios. It would just drive them crazy. At least when you're in a job and you're getting right, you go, well, those 2 hours I was paid. When you're not being paid for it, when you're giving up time with your family, when you're giving up from your own hobbies, and then it was of no use. That waste of effort and waste of time is something that it's something that really, that waiting for someone drives me crazy as well. It's something I've got to work on. Mm-hmm. It's one of my problems. If I'm I find myself that lean, when you look at lean organizations and how they look at removing that waste time in there. And I know I've been in organizations who've spent a lot of time doing lean, but there are still big holes in all of our lives where we're waiting for some swear word else to do something. I don't usually stop myself swearing on this show anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But those things just drive me absolutely crazy. And it kind of, the next actions, are, the next steps are, because I've always had this thing with action logs and meetings. And the first thing you do is look at the action log and review the ones that no one's done. Or if they have done, they haven't thought about doing it until you start talking to them about it in that meeting at that time. I've been guilty of doing it. I know everyone's been guilty of doing it, and it's not unusual. Yeah, it's kind of like you go there, right? Oh, yeah, I'll get that. And then the rest of the world just smashes you in the face. And you, a week later, you go, oh, ferrets. As you look at that thing going, I should have done that. So either if you're lucky and you've read it before the meeting, you remembered that you had to do that action. And you now, good behavior is that you take those actions. As soon as you've got it, you write it in wherever you, whatever your calendar is and what you're going to use, decide when you're going to do it, plan it, and all that sort of thing. I think, one, actions kind of has a bad rap. But it is, it's fundamentals, isn't it, really? It's fundamental meeting management. And I had a organization called Templo that we were sponsoring the show for a while, and they have a thing with better meetings, and it's all about that. It's all about those, managing those actions, managing when people are meant to do it, integrating that into the into people's time management system so that it happens, so it's automatic, so it's not on that Word document at the bottom with last updated dates of, or you know, where you end up having a date when no movement, and it ends up being 20 pages long of one action where it's no movement. And I think the things that the next steps, and working out how you take that tooling of those next steps as an individual, and I think it's something for all of us to do, is if someone gives you an action, record that action somewhere and make sure you remember you're going to do it, and schedule that action in your diary for when you're going to do it. Don't wait for the minutes to come out. We should be taking our notes. We should do it. And that's one of the things. Now, the tooling that we've got in there, the Microsoft Loop stuff in Teams and things like that, brilliant. Now, I haven't quite got it working for me and people who I work with, but I can see how we can use it and how you can integrate all these things together. Again, working with, again, in your organization, I imagine when you've got volunteers, they're not going to be all on the same IT. You're not going to have all these organizations using the same, so it becomes harder to do that. And that, those next steps, I think it just sounds like a good way of formalizing it rather than actions. I have an action. No, it's the next step that we're taking in this process. It's just the next steps we're doing. It doesn't feel as you say, you're not going to get told off for not doing your actions. It's just the next step that someone needs to do.
I think you just brought it full circle back to people. You talk about volunteers are not on the same tech. No, they're absolutely not. No. And they will resist certain tech with every fiber of their being.
I have that in the household.
You can try to force it, but it's not going anywhere. So figuring out where they are, meeting them where they are with whether it's an email, whether it's a phone call. I know that sounds... nutty in this day and age, but sometimes a phone call will get you everywhere.
Well, the thing is, people answer the phone these days because it's unusual.
Yes.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? We're all instant message, aren't we? It's so many organizations. Your WhatsApp groups are your powerful tools. They're really good communication. Your Slack groups and all that. And I've got very good friends who, that's who we talk to about for ages, and then we meet up in the pub and we have a good chat. But we won't necessarily pick up the phone to have a chat, because that isn't, you don't think about that. And same with work as well. I've got IM and Teams meetings and things like that where you will. I won't.
It took me forever to embrace Slack.
I don't get Slack. It's not in order. It's just all over the place. And I've looked at it and my brain melts.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. But I have a group that I work with right now. All of their communication is in Slack. Yeah. And it's my fault. I asked them to vote. That's what they voted for. And I was like, oh, really? Really? Are you sure? And they were really sure. So, you know, that's where they are. That's the way we communicate. And man, are they good at it. We get so much done so efficiently. Yeah. But if I have the exact same communication tool for a different group, we would get nowhere. Just absolutely nowhere.
You've got to match it to the individuals, haven't you? It's got to be, it's the important tooling, and I think it's I've noticed it recently where the more different types of tool, the more like email has been, is the weapon of choice for people a lot, and it's corporate organizations still is that weapon of choice. It still is a poor weapon, because it's, well, any of them that are in text, they're a poor weapon as far as I'm concerned, but because you can, misunderstandings are dead easy then. Voice, this kind of conversation, much easier to understand what the other one's talking about and whether they're serious, silly, or confused. And whereas on text, you can't, you always put your own interpretation on it. And I think
what's your the thing that you use with the who stole the milk? What is it?
Yeah. It's I never said she stole the milk.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and
I'm still gonna borrow that at some point.
Fine. I don't know who I stole it from. I probably mentioned it. I always talk to my daughters on that when they first got on their phones, so that they understand. They still don't, because they still have little. Well, she said this, and then there's a load of intonation on what the words are on the text. And I'm kind of, no, she didn't. She might have said this, and it's kind of like, oh yeah, it might have been different. Might, yeah. So, because we all do it, we always put our own filter on, and that filter's terrible.
We do dramatic readings of texts in my house.
Oh, good God, yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah, I'm sitting there when you hear someone reading that, and it's kind of it's like a Shakespearean play, and it's a four-word text. But the amount of gravitas put on certain words, and you sit there going, hang on. No, could it mean this? And it's kind of, oh, yeah. Yeah, if you change the emphasis, could it have meant that? And they go, oh, yeah, never thought of that. It's just crazy. And the same with emails as well. I've had it before now where I've read emails and thought, you cheeky mother. And then gone, hang on. Actually, stop myself. It's highly unlikely someone wrote that in that way. Think about it again, and then go back, and hopefully when I've written ones where I'm being that absurdic with people that they've not realised, but who knows? You've been giving me so much time, and I think we could probably chat about different things on this till the cows come home and bring the milk. In fact, I know you've got more to do today, and it's getting late here for me as well. Kelly, it's been brilliant having you on the show. I'm sure that there's something that we've missed. Is there anything that you would have wanted to tell the listeners if you had a chance that I haven't asked, because I've gone down too many rabbit holes?
It's been so much fun talking to you. I just come back to relationships are everything, and keeping that balance between people and project management is just square number one.
Brilliant. And so if people wanted to find out more, get in touch, what's the best thing to do?
My website is great. It's findfunctionandflow.com, or LinkedIn. I'm at Kelly S. McGinley, or Find Function and Flow too. So either place is great.
Brilliant. Well, again, like I say, thank you very much for giving me so much time this evening for me, this afternoon for you. And have a brilliant rest of your day.
Thanks, Nigel. You too.
Cheers now.
Bye-bye.
Another great sponsor of the show comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is it's a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by a guy, one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. And I kind of summarised why my view of where we see documentation, a lot of my experience has been, people will document something, a process, they'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar, and then a bunch of that. So then once that diagram's been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be in Word documents, in just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint. And then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelpriester.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get, I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organisation. So yeah, take a look. Well, I hope you enjoyed the second part of that interview with Kelly. Some real insight there into different approaches to delivery, and I really enjoyed the conversations around getting people to do stuff when you have no role power over them within these volunteer organisations. It's fascinating. So enjoy the rest of your day, evening, morning, weekend, whenever you're listening. Cheers now. Bye. So this is my final wrap-up. Every week you're going to hear this. You're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think, that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nige out, there are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast. Send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, or send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. And that'll push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well. And I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tool and goes beyond that. Has a really good free layer. And I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive and of high quality, and people keen to help me. The organization seems really good. The product seems really intuitive. Quality is really good as well, and it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So if you are thinking of doing a podcast, know someone's doing a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreaser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.